desk there, it has been offered just for the purpose of discussion. Basically, what the amendment would do,
move the amendment.
Okay, Senator Zaroff is moving an amendment that has now been duplicated, but the secretary does have it. Would you read it by title?
Amendment number 23 by Senator Zaroff, page 1, line 1.
Senator Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think with all the confusion and all the discussions here that we've had and the changes that are taking place in the area of gaming, that the state probably needs, and probably, we've worked on this before, in fact, this concept has passed this body within the last 2 years, and it died in the other body. But what it basically did was set up a gaming commission. And it would certainly alleviate a lot of the problems there that we're hearing about, and would pretty much depoliticize, I would think, the issues that arise during the permitting process and the issuance of permits, and and also come up with the interpretation of what the laws are without having somebody sitting there in the Department of Commerce, or if this is transferred into the Department of Revenue. And it puts a lot of burden on the person that is in charge of that particular division. So I think very seriously there that we need to take a look at a bill that is sitting now in the Labor and Commerce Committee, Senate Bill 27, which does create the Gaming Commission. So with that explanation, I think, Mr. President, as we move through this process, if this legislation moves along, that I think very seriously that we need to establish some mechanism in the state that separates it one step further away from the bureaucracy, if you will, and puts some of the decision-making process into the public sector, which you can do through this gaming commission, which would establish it using this procedure, would set up 5 members, 1 from each of these 4 judicial districts, and 1 person at large. So with that, I'm going to withdraw this amendment, but I would also request there that members of this body look at the possibility of, at some point in time, seriously considering the establishment of a gaming commission for the state.
Senator Zaroff, you move that to ask consent the amendment be withdrawn. Without objection, the amendment is withdrawn. That brings us back to the motion to advance committee substitute to Senate Bill 76, Finance. There is objection. Question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 76, Finance, be considered engrossed, advance a third reading and place in the final passage? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute Senate Bill 76, Finance, has failed to advance from second to third reading by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays. It will appear on tomorrow's calendar. Would the secretary please read the next item on today's calendar? Senator Jekyll.
Mr. President, can we move back up the introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, we're back under introduction of guests. Senator Jekyll.
I would like to introduce several school board members from in the Ziegler Gallery from Togiak and Manicouri, Moses Cripps and Mel Franklin Stanford.
Madam Secretary, the next item on the calendar.
Senate Bill number 200 by Senator Jackal, an act allowing the holders of a multiple beneficiary charitable gaming permit that consists entirely of non-commercial broadcasting stations or networks of such stations to sell a pull tab series at more than one location during the same day if the sales are made at the customary business location of one or more of the holders, at another location by employee of one or more of the stations or network, or by a registered vendor, allowing permittees that are non-commercial broadcasting stations or networks of such stations to contract with vendors to sell pull tabs on behalf of the permittee at retail establishments, eating establishments, and establishments with liquor licenses, allowing municipalities to prohibit vendors from conducting gaming activities in the municipality relating to reports by the Commissioner Regulating Charitable Gaming to the Legislature requiring registration of vendors relating to multiple beneficiary charitable gaming permits and door prizes for charitable gaming, preventing persons with felony convictions or convictions for crimes involving theft or dishonesty or a violation of gambling laws from being involved in charitable gaming activity as a permittee, licensee, vendor, person responsible for an activity, fundraiser, or consultant of a licensee, or employing a managerial or supervisor capacity, and providing exceptions for certain persons whose convictions are at least 10 years old and are not for a violation of unclassified felony describing AS 11, a Class A felony, or extortion prohibiting a prize or award of more than $250,000 in a pull-tab game that provides a right to participate in a lottery, requiring a vendor contract with the permittee to pay the permittee at least 50% of the ideal net for each pull-tab series delivered to the vendor by the permittee, and providing for an effective date. Finance Committee considers the bill, recommends it be replaced with CS and due pass. Report presented by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs, concurring. Senators Jacko and Rigger, Senator Kelly Curtulis, I do not pass. Senator Sharp, on my recommendation, zero fiscal note. Rules Committee considers the bill, recommends calendar. Report presented by Senator Halford, excuse me, resigned by Senator Jacko, chair, concurring. Senators Halford, Rigger, and Little. There's a Finance CS.
Senator Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking for amendments. I would move an unanimous consent that the Finance CS for Senate Bill 200 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection, Senator Pierce.
Amendments made in the Finance Committee, we did a title amendment, conforming title amendment. We There was some concern because under the, as I understand it and as I remember, under the original bill that allowed the networks access to gaming in our state, at that time the radio, public radio network said that they planned to use their proceeds to build an endowment, and that then the interest from that endowment on a long-term basis would replace their general funds, and we would no longer be having to put money into the network on an annual basis. What we did was put an amendment on page 7, line 24, following vendor, that clarifies that not less than 50% of the net proceeds from the activity must be placed in an endowment fund for the purposes and uses provided in ASO 515-150. That was to make it clear that that indeed is going to be the use of these funds.
Is the objection maintained to the adoption of Finance CS? Without objection, the Finance CS is adopted.
CS for Senate Bill number 200, Finance, for the Finance Committee, an act allowing the holders of a multiple beneficiary charitable gaming permit that consists entirely of non-commercial broadcasting stations or network of such stations to sell a pull tab series at more than one location during the same day if the sales are made at the customary business location of one or more of the holders at another location by employee of one of the stations or networks or by a registered vendor, allowing permittees that are non-commercial broadcasting stations or networks of such stations to contract with vendors to sell pull tops on behalf of the permittees at retail establishments, eating establishments, and establishments with liquor license, requiring at least 50% of the net proceeds of certain activities conducted by non-commercial broadcasting stations and networks of those stations be placed in an endowment fund, the earnings of which may be used for that purpose, and under the procedures provided by law, allowing municipalities to prohibit vendors from conducting gaming activities within the municipality relating to reports by the commissioner regulating charitable gaming to the legislature, requiring registration of vendors relating to multiple beneficiary charitable gaming permits and door prizes for charitable gaming, preventing persons with certain convictions from being involved in charitable gaming activities as a vendor, prohibiting a pull tab game that provides a right to participate in a lottery if a prize or award in the lottery exceeds $250,000, requiring a vendor contracting with the permittee to pay the permittee at least 50% of the ideal net for each pull tab series delivered to the vendor by the permittee and providing for an effective date. I have no amendments.
Senator Duncan. Mr. President, just as a question before the motion. Yeah, I was just wondering, Mr. President, just so I understand the consistency or inconsistency between these two bills, the one we previously passed and this one. Section 9 of this bill on page 5, and I just want to understand this. I don't know what it might lead to, but it seems to me to be a local option. And I'm wondering why, because we had long debate and detailed debate on the other bill about a local option amendment, which was rejected, you know, out of hand by the majority. Is this a local option here? And why here and not there?
Senator Pierce.
That section is already in statute, and that's what the bear behind me was trying to explain when he stood up and said, but we already have that local option.
Senator.
Mr. President, maybe I ask another question as a follow-up then, because I didn't hear the bear over there. But this does not apply to what the folks, I mean, the rural areas of the state, the villages and others, is that correct? Can we just have some, maybe I guess what I'm thinking is maybe this should be expanded to include and I guess I don't understand how this works anyway, when you're doing over-the-air type things, how you, if it's over-the-air, maybe more than one municipality may be picking up that those airwaves. I just wanted some explanation of this.
Senator Jacko?
Well, Mr. President, it's my understanding that it is a local option. I guess as far as for the airwaves, if it's picked up in another municipality, I'm not sure how you could restrict that, but it's my understanding that each individual station is regulated by that municipality that it's in. So, but beyond where the airwaves are heard, I don't know how you would address that.
Senator Duncan.
One further question. Does this address the same people that the senator from Rampart was trying to address with her local option amendment on the other bill?
Further debate in second reading, Senator Taylor.
Yes. I was going to move the bill.
Senator Adams.
Just have a question on a fiscal note. There is none here. And in the previous bill, we did have a fiscal note there that had a new tax auditor. Is that tax auditor in the previous bill going to take care of the business in out of this piece of legislation?
Senator Jacko.
Mr. Chairman, it sounds like that would work for me.
Further debate? Senator Lincoln.
Since the maker of the bill asked the question, did not know what it was that I, the two amendments that I asked, it was that the local community have the ability to have local option as to whether they want that pull tab operation or gaming permitted in the community. And I, as I understand, that's the question that's being asked. It's the same question that I asked on my two amendments that I proposed. Does this bill allow the communities to decide for themselves whether under local option, is that the way that this is reading? And I ask that of the author of the bill.
Senator Jacko.
Mr. President, this was the same section that was referred to in the previous bill, and as the member from East Anchorage indicated, that it did cover this.
Senator Lincoln.
What could you please tell me what it covers, please? Are you saying yes, that there is local option for each community? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Senator
Once again,
Jacko.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Further debate on second reading, Senator Taylor, Senator Couture.
Just briefly. My memory is in Prince William Sound, we have a relatively recent addition to the radio network. I think that they have transmission, special transmission devices to go over to communities in the Sound, another community almost its own same size. I think Valdez, Cordova are tied together. So you could have a situation which Cordova, if in fact, the testimony is correct, and I think we don't all know it that carefully. We could go stop and look at statutes, but presumably we have the night to do that. But anyway, if the situation is if Cordova had a local option that was negative, they would still hear the transmission and the offers from the Valdez, and if in fact they were positive in this subject. So you're going to get some confusion there. Presumably it can be ironed out, but you do have that potential.
Senator Pierce.
Mr. President, because we're talking about broadcast networks, primarily radio, and because those networks, the individual stations operate under FCC rules, frankly, this statewide approach that the networks would be looking at is more controlled than just our law, and the senator from Rampart should know that FCC rules require each local station to decide whether or not it is going to be a part of the opportunity, and so there would be a vote by the board of the local stations. Now, I know that that is not the same as having a full vote of all the people in a community, as the senator is interested in doing, and I do believe that she's going to be drafting legislation to do that.
Senator Salo.
At ease, please.
Without objection, the Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? Committee substitute for Senate Bill 200, Finance, is before us in second reading. Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent. Committee substitute Senate Bill 200, Finance, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
There is objection to the advancement of committee substitute for Senate Bill 200,
Mr. President.
Finance. On the motion, Senator Little.
Well, I was standing before the motion was made, Mr. President. I just had a question. Is it possible to ask it at this point? Okay. I had heard that there are grave objections by public radio boards to participating in gaming activities. I was just wondering if the sponsor of the legislation knows how many station boards, if any, are interested in doing this.
Senator Jackal.
Mr. President, I don't know the specific numbers, but I was the testimony we received in finance that there was a statewide survey done. It was quite an extensive survey, and the survey came back indicating that there was overwhelming support that for this public purpose, the radio stations, that they would support gaming activities for raising money.
Senator Donnelly, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I just wanted to clarify this discussion about local option. The language in this proposal seems to be identical to the last proposal the body examined. It does not allow a local option for this activity. It only allows a local option for operators and vendors. The permittees could continue this activity just as if the vendors and operators weren't there. In fact, the permittees could even band together and open up their own place to do this activity. So it's not really a local option at all for the activity itself. It's only a local option for whether or not you want to allow operators or vendors in your community, but you still don't have the local authority to limit any form of gaming activity under this language. And that's what I think, you know, some of the previous proposals have allowed that were defeated.
Senator Jackal.
Mr. President, I think what happens is that each station membership elects a local board of directors, and the local board of directors makes a decision at the local level.
Senator Pierce.
I'm just going to say the same thing as I explained. While the senator from Spinard is correct in as far as he's gone, he apparently wasn't listening when I was talking about the FCC and the fact that these stations' boards have to elect in or out. It doesn't meet what the senator from Rampart was trying to get to in her amendment, but there certainly is an option that has to be made by the local broadcast station. I might add that the board of directors of the public radio network statewide are the ones who authorized and are seeking this legislation all the way back in February of this year. All local stations are represented on the APRN board. There may be some individuals on the boards of some of the local stations who are not, who are opposed to using gaming in this manner. I don't know, but certainly the network itself is in support. In fact, they are the ones that came and asked for the legislation.
Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. President. But that still doesn't empower the members of the community as such. It only empowers the members of that particular public radio station or that particular organization in that community. And that's different than Section 8 of the bill, which actually empowers the municipality to, through their elected representatives, who are elected by everybody in the community, not like the boards of the public radio stations, which are only elected by the memberships of that particular radio station, to determine whether or not they want to allow this type of gaming activity in their community.
The question before the Senate is the advancement of committee substitute for Senate Bill 200 Finance to third reading. Senator Duncan.
Just very quickly on the advancement motion, I'm going to oppose the advancement motion today because I really don't understand what we're doing here, and I just want to make it clear for the record. You know, it's incongruous, right? This majority organization, the majority leadership, on one hand, is bringing a bill to the floor that says we're going to limit gambling, we're going to do what's right, limit gaming, we're cleaning it up, and then the same majority is bringing a bill to the floor that greatly expands it. Greatly expands it. And you can't have it both ways. This greatly expands it. The first bill greatly expanded it. Really, what this day is, it's expand gaming in Alaska Day. That's what it should be noted as, because that's what both of these bills do. And I don't understand. I mean, the senator from East Anchorage said it. The first word out of his first speech he made today on the floor was, hey, the bill we got before us, 176, is not the expansion. 200 is. Well, he was slightly misspoke. 200 just expands it more maybe than 176 did, but they both expand it greatly. Gaming in Alaska Day.
The question of Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, I actually tend to agree with the minority leader on this particular issue. The one bill does limit gaming in Alaska, and it certainly restricts gaming proceeds from going into the political process, but this bill does expand gaming in this one particular area, this one particular game. That's why I am going to have it both ways. I'm going to vote for one and against the other.
The question before the Senate is the advancement of committee substitute, Senate Bill 200, Finance. Senator Lincoln.
Thank you. As I said earlier, I'm not opposed to gambling, but the public, I mean, where is it that the public gets to have input into this piece of legislation? We had it introduced on Thursday.
Point of order, Mr. President.
Well, I'm just inquiring.
Point of order, Mr.
Senator
President.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you. The issue before the body is whether or not the legislation should advance, not debate upon the entire body of the legislation. The only issue is should the legislation advance or not advance.
Mr. President, I understand that question, and I am inquiring where the public is going to have some input into this as to whether I allow it to advance from second to third and then out. I want to know where the general public is going to have some input into whether they want to expand gambling. And this was just introduced on Thursday of last week, and here it is Monday, and you know we're advancing it from second to third.
The motion before the Senate is the advancement committee substitute for Senate Bill 200, Finance. Senator Jackal.
Mr. President, I want to expand to or to respond to the comments from Senator from Rampart. As far as for the local input, I can't speak for the boards of the radio stations in other parts of the state of Alaska, but the boards of the radio stations in western Alaska, the constituency that I represent, have been pretty sensitive to local concerns. So I think that somewhat provides for local input as to whether or not this actually does happen. And it's the local boards or the local radio stations have not decided if they want to do this or not. It was basically the APRN statewide board, I guess is what it is, approved this after a survey that they would support something like this. So they have the option of doing it or not doing it. As far as for whether or not this is actually an expansion of gaming or gambling, it isn't an expansion per se in this piece of legislation. The expansion was made in 1990. As I understand, 16 Alaska state legislature authorized statewide on-the-air charitable games by non-commercial broadcasters. The department has indicated to us that they need this legislation to clarify that legislation so that they could go forward with what was done in 1990. So this is not an expansion. It's a clarification of what was done previously.
Question before the Senate is the advancement of committee substitute, Senate Bill 200, Senator Donnelly.
Mr. President, in response to remarks of the previous speaker, the 1990 legislation was clearly within the confines of the existing law. There was no additional special games authorized of any form. This is clearly an expansion because it seeks to authorize a new type of game for this particular activity or this particular organization. That's why it's an expansion, and it's a massive one. And I guess to drag it back to the point, and that's why the public should be aware of this and have an extra day to consider this and while it's moving from second to third reading, so they can become educated about this as much as possible, because this really does seem to be on a fast track here. This is clearly an expansion because nothing in the 1990 law authorized any unique forms of games. It was all anticipated under existing forms of gaming.
Question before the Senate is the advancement of committee substitute, Senate Bill 200. If there's no further debate, members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? So committee substitute Senate Bill 200 Finance fails to advance by a vote of 10 yeas to 10 nays. Would the secretary please read the next item on the calendar?
Senate Bill number 129 by the Rules Committee, by the request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, an act relating to state's chief procurement officer. That Affairs Committee consider the bill, recommends a CS, and the majority of the committee reports it back with no recommendation. The report was signed by Senator Lehman, Chair, concurring Senators Taylor, Duncan, and Miller, zero fiscal note. Finance Committee consider the bill, recommends it be replaced with Finance CS. In due course, report was signed by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs, concurring Senators Sharp, Jackal, Rigger, and Kelly, 2-0 fiscal notes. Rules Committee consider the bill, recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Jackal, Chair, concurring Senators Rigger and Halford. Senator Little signed no rec. There are two committee substitutes.
Mr. President, I would move an unanimous consent that CS for Senate Bill 129 Finance be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee has adopted in lieu of the original bill. Senator, if you want to object, you got to object when she says it.
I did.
You didn't. Too late.
Mr. President, he just wants to know the differences.
Yes, I want to know the differences.
And they're only 5 pages long. Would you like me to read them?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to allow Senator Duncan's objection after the fact. This time.
Well,
Senator Pierce.
I'll have to explain it anyway, so I might as well do it now. First of all, and at the request of the, forgotten what Dugan Petty's title is, State Procurement Officer, that guy.
Mr. President?
Senator, are you rising to a point of order, or?
Well, I like...
Senator Pierce has the floor unless you're rising to a point of order, or unless she wishes to yield to you.
If Senator Phillips wants to go through the three amendments, that's fine with me.
I'll give it an attempt. I just wanted to give an overview.
Senator Phillips.
Why the bill is here before us.
That's not the point.
Okay, we'll go through it. Between the bills.
Okay, the motion is to adopt the Finance Committee substitute. I believe the objection was based on what are the differences between the Finance Committee substitute and the original bill. Who would like to state those differences? Senator Phillips.
Mr. President, very briefly, Section 1 is unchanged. Section 2, State Affairs, has changed the procurement officer from range 27, which I had in the original bill, to 23. That was at your request, Senator Duncan. Section 3 is a new section. I might add, OMB had a report dealing with the Wildwood acquisition. It was their recommendation
that this be in the bill. That was done in the Finance Committee. Section 4 was at the request of the Department of Administration, which was done at the State Affairs Committee. Section 5 remains the same as the original bill. Section 6 was, again, at the request of the Department of Administration, which was done in State Affairs Committee. Section 7 is the same. Section 8, Department of Administration, again, made this recommendation, which the State Affairs Committee had concurred. Same thing with Section 9 and 10 and 11. Section 12 was inserted by the Finance Committee, and this is dealing with the state leases. I believe the one of the co-chairs from Finance can explain the details of that one. And Section 13 is the same as the original bill, and the effective date clause, which was put in Section 14, was placed in the Finance Committee. And that's basically the rundown.
Now, thank you, Senator. Is Senator Adams.
Thank you. Thank you for the explanation. He touched on a couple changes that were made in state affairs, and I'm interested in Section 10 and 11. Section 10, under 31, there, starting lines 8 and 10, it says that contracts between the Department of Law and attorneys who are not employees, they can work on contracts. Isn't it true that we can already do this without that particular provision in the law? It has been already proven by a recent case with Division of Elections, that they did get separate attorneys due to a conflict of interest. And I'm just stating that perhaps that language is not necessary. And I ask that one question. The second question happens to be with Section 11 is a repealer section. And that repealer was placed in State Affairs. With that repealer, don't you think now it'll be easier to skip around the usual bidding process and hopefully that we can keep that language in the bill versus repealing it?
Further questions on the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute?
Mr. President, the sections that the Senator from Kasapu had mentioned were at the request of Department Administration. We accommodated their needs, and we accepted it.
Further debate on the adoption of the Finance CS. Further objection? There is objection to the adoption of the Finance CS. The question before the Senate is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 129 be adopted? Senator Phillips.
At this point in the juncture, would it be appropriate why this bill was introduced, or should we do it in third reading? Okay.
The question before the Senate is the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute. Would the members please vote? Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Senator Curtula from yea to a nay. Any other member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? So the Finance Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill for Senate Bill 129 by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays. Madam Secretary.
CS for Senate Bill Number 129, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to state procurement and providing for an effective date, and I have amendment number 1, if...
Would you please bring the amendment forward? Would one of the pages give the amendment to the secretary first? Madam Secretary, would you please read the amendment?
Amendment number 1 by Senator Frank, page 2, line 12, after property, and it's been distributed.
Senator Frank.
Mr. President, I move the amendment. I ask unanimous consent.
Amendment is moved, unanimous consent is asked. Is there objection?
Yes.
It's pretty slow.
There is objection. Senator Frank.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is an item that was brought to our attention by the Department of Revenue, and I'm passing, having the pages pass out a letter by the Department of Revenue requesting the amendment. It would allow them to, have you passed out letters?
Yes.
Okay. To take advantage of lower interest rates under the current lease purchase arrangements that they have, rather than requiring them to come back to the legislature to take advantage of a lower interest rate. Yeah, I view it as a kind of a technical amendment. We didn't have it in time to deal with it up at the finance. Well, we didn't do it up in finance. I would move the amendment.
Senator Duncan.
Let me be sure I understand this, because this deals with notice to the legislature. So I guess what you're saying here, and maybe this makes a lot of sense, I just want to be sure I understand it, is that in all other leases, because they may be greater than a certain level, or they may tie us into some long-term payments, we have to have notice before they do that. But because it's refinancing, we're already tied in, and they'd only refinance to go lower instead of higher, that notice is not required. Is that what you're saying?
Without objection, amendment number one is adopted. Are there further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent. Committee substitute Senate Bill 129, Finance, be considered engrossed, advanced second, third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection. There is objection. The question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 129, Finance, amended, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage? Senator Little.
The reason that I would like to have additional time, Mr. President, is I'm concerned about the language that's been placed here for Wildwood to take care of the Wildwood facility situation. I need to have extra time to speak with the maker of this bill to find out exactly how that affects my district.
Senator Frank?
I don't think it has any retroactive feature. I don't think it has any effect on the Wildwood situation.
Senator Phillips?
Speaker, the co-chair of Finance is correct. This was brought to our attention here just on April 9th from the Division of OMB. And there is an audit also from LBNA. I have no idea when that's going to be completed, but this is a result of a recommendation by OMB.
Senator Frank.
Note that I think that many members of this body have been concerned about the administration acquiring through lease purchase real property that really should come through a legislative approval. And this bill, thanks to the senator from Eagle River, is before us, and I would urge we adopt it.
Question before the Senate is the advancement of committee substitute Senate Bill 129, Finance. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so, committee substitute, Senate Bill 129, Finance amended, does not advance from second to third reading by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays, will appear on tomorrow's calendar. Would the secretary please read the next item on the calendar?
Senate Bill number 45 by Senators Phillips, Halford, Kelly, Miller, Lehman, and Sharp. An act related to persons under 21 years of age, providing for designation of safe homes for runaway minors and providing for an effective date. House Committee considers the bill, recommends a CS, and reports it back with majority no rec. Report was signed by Senator Rieger, Chair, concurring Senators Miller, Duncan, Salo, and Sharp. Senator Lehman signed deep pass. Finance Committee considers the bill, recommends a finance CS. Report was signed by Senator Frank, co-chair, concurring Senators Kelly, Jackal, Rieger, and Sharp. Senators Pierce, co-chair, and Senator Petula signed no rec.
Rules Committee considers the bill recommends calendar with a rules CS. Previous fiscal notes, report was signed by Senator Jacko, Chair, concurring Senators Ruger and Halford. Senator Little signed, do not pass. There are three committee substitutes.
Senator Jacko, there is a rules CS. The Rules Committee substitute has been moved. There is objection. Senator Phillips.
Mr. President, the only difference between the finance and rules, if you look at the Rules Committee substitute, page 7, line 9, it's a drafting error, actually. The word guardian is deleted, and the word custodian is inserted. That's the only difference between the finance and Rules Committee substitute. Line 9.
Senator Adams?
Yes. Does the sponsor of the bill feel compelled to put the child labor hours criteria in Section 11 in this bill and not in the, we had the Senate Bill 51 the other day, work camps for juvenile offenders?
Senator Phillips?
Speaker, there's a distinction between the two. Once the delinquent has been sentenced, he's essentially subjugated under the court. And this right here, there is a distinction between runaways and juvenile delinquents as sentenced in court. President, do you want me to go through the section by section?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. No, thank you, Senator. Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, I think the senator from Eagle River wanted to do that on the previous bill, and we didn't let him. I think we should let him give his position.
The question before the Senate is the adoption of the Rules Committee substitute. Is the objection maintained? Without objection, the Rules Committee substitute is adopted.
CS for Senate Bill number 45, Rules by the Rules Committee, an act related to persons under 21 years of age, relating to programs for runaway minors, providing for designation of shelters for runaway minors, relating to the detention and incarceration of minors, and providing for an effective date. Amendment number 1 by Senator Ellis, page 1, line 5, and it's been distributed.
Senator Ellis.
Mr. President, I move amendment number 1.
Okay. Amendment number 1 has been moved. There is objection. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. There are few bills that will pass through the legislative process this year that I find as offensive as this one in the section that I propose in this amendment to delete. I have some concerns that I'll express under third reading with other parts of the bill. Some misgivings about what occurs there, and I think some adjustments were made through the legislative process, but this portion of the bill still troubles me greatly. What the and you'd never know it from the title that what is allowed under the title or in the legislation. This bill proposes to allow, through court process, a parent or parents to involuntarily emancipate their child. Some people have referred this as being allowed by the state to divorce your troubled teen. I think it's the wrong direction to go in our society. It will encourage throwaway and runaway youth. I don't think there could be anything more tragic in a young person's life than for the parents who've presumably come to know a young person through a number of years in the family to then make the judgment and through legal action involuntarily emancipate that young person, to cut them off from the family for all time. that I just think that we're going way too far in this legislation to do that. You wouldn't know it from the title. You wouldn't know that that's what is being proposed in this legislation. And I think, you know, there's some good things about the rest of the bill, even though I do have some misgivings about the creation of another system of runaway shelters in the state that have less oversight than existing facilities. But we can get into that more later. This is just the part of the bill that really offends me, and I know a lot of us say that we want to adjust government policies so that they're pro-family, that they encourage families staying together, that we should have family-centered services. In fact, that's a big initiative, or was a big initiative, in Division of Family and Youth Services, and their way of going about that was sort of discredited. And a previous director left, and there was an audit, and on. I think some of you know the history of that division as well as I do. But the new person there is talking about family-centered services, and I'm very much encouraged that. That's not an excuse to get rid of foster care or some of the other necessary services during the transition period. But just suffice it to say that everybody talks about keeping the family together whenever possible and having government policies in place that encourage families to stay together. And I believe this bill allowing parents to involuntarily emancipate their teenager, and that will be a big temptation for a lot of people. I mean, I would imagine that you talk to people raising teenagers in this day and age, in this society, and all the temptations and all the mixed messages out there and all the influences of the mass media and peer pressure and other things, that it's a very difficult task. Parents are up against a lot raising teenagers. But to make it a government policy that we will allow parents to involuntarily emancipate difficult teenagers, I've heard over and over, Mr. President, the stories of people that could be classified as troubled teenagers or troubled youth who've turned out just great because their family stuck by them and they worked it out, they went to counseling, they participated in church activities, whatever they could to pull it back together and solve those problems. And there are groups out there, the Tough Love group, that spends a lot of time working on some very difficult measures to straighten out a young person and keep the family together. And I just think this goes way too far and is not a good government policy to have in place a procedure for getting rid of your difficult child. It's the wrong direction to go. People who are upset about, families breaking up, I think this government policy would just encourage that to a much greater extent, and we'll have higher costs down the road. If society then takes on, I think that a lot of these costs, once a family or parents give up and involuntarily emancipate a child, at the age of 16, that it's very likely that youth will become a burden on the state. And I don't think that's the direction we want to go.
Senator Pierce?
Do you have any of these?
Will the Senate please come back to order? What? We are considering amendment number 1. Senator Pierce.
Mr. President, I apologize for this, but I'm going to be making a motion that Senate Bill 45 be moved back to the Rules Committee, and I'd like to be able to explain to the body why. In Senate Finance Committee, we adopted...
Senator Pierce, just so that we're right...
Go ahead and make the motion.
Make the motion, okay. Which is a precedential motion, so that it does come up.
Mr. President, I would move that Senate Bill 45 be returned to the Rules Committee.
Okay, I'll assume there's objection just for explanation.
Okay. Senate Finance Committee accepted a conceptual amendment that should be in Section 6 on page 3. It is not there. I believe that probably what happened is that the Finance Committee staff missed and brought the wrong one down to the Senate Secretary. We will make sure that in Rules Committee the proper amendment that was made in Finance Committee goes into the bill.
I assume that the bill with the amendment pending then goes back to the Rules Committee under the motion. Senator Ellis on the motion to return to rules.
Thank you, Mr. President. I support the motion to send the bill back to committee because several of us asked for amendments to be drafted on the identical point, the section that I'm concerned about, and those amendments have come out wrong, and I think I understand now why, with the explanation from the co-chair for finance. So I would like to say to the prime sponsor of the bill that before he rises to say that the amendment is off, that I realize that now, and that's the explanation. And so I don't know if it would be better for me to withdraw the amendment or just let it go back, or for good housekeeping purposes, I'll follow your direction.
It can be referred to committee with the amendment pending or with the amendment withdrawn. If you prefer to withdraw the amendment, you can go ahead.
At this time, Mr. President, I'll move and ask unanimous consent to be allowed to withdraw amendment number one because it's defective given what happened in finance.
Without objection, amendment number one is withdrawn.
Thank you.
Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, just a question just so we'll understand what's going to happen. Now, this bill is going back to the Rules Committee and we'll have substantive work done on it, apparently. So will we have a written publication 24 hours in advance?
Not necessarily, Senator Duncan. Hopefully there will be notice of when it's going to be heard. Senator Pierce?
Mr. President, I was just going to rise to ask whether it can be called substantive when the amendment has been properly adopted. What we have on the floor hasn't been properly adopted, so all we're going to do is fix it. That's not substantive. That's making something correct.
That assumes that what we have before us is not substantive, and that may be correct. Therefore, I don't know, Senator Duncan. The question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 45 rules be returned to rules? Without objection, the bill is returned to the Rules Committee. Would the Secretary please read the next item on the calendar?
Excuse me. CS for Senate Bill number 178, June, an act related to civil nuisance actions and providing for an effective date held on reconsideration from Sunday.
Committee substitute, Senate Bill 178, Judiciary, is on third reading on reconsideration before the body. Members may proceed to vote. Oh, there's an amendment?
There's a couple of them. Brief at ease, Mr. President.
Senator will stand at ease, please.
Mr.
Will the Senate please come back to order? Senator Salo? You want to announce?
Oh, I get your request first. I would like to announce that there will be a minority caucus in the Belts Room on the recess.
Senator Taylor, we won't be recessing. We will be at ease at with ease. The call still on. But
I'm going Senator to ask Taylor. For an at ease and ask for a caucus in the Butrovich Room.
Okay, without objection, the Senate will stand at ease. We're still under the call on the second floor. Will the Senate please come back to order? We have before us committee substitute Senate Bill 178, Judiciary, in third reading on reconsideration. Senator Adams.
Yes, there is amendment number two before three and four. Is number two going to be taken up?
Senator Adams, the bill would have to go back to second reading based on a motion. The amendments aren't read unless there's a motion on a specific amendment. Senator Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that we revert from third reading back to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment, that being amendment number two.
We have a motion to return to second reading for purpose of a specific amendment. Senator Duncan, do you object? Senate will stand at ease. Senate Bill 178, Judiciary, has been returned to second reading for specific amendment number two. Senator Taylor.
I would move amendment number two and ask unanimous consent.
Amendment number two has been moved. Senator Duncan objects. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. President. Briefly explaining the amendment, page one, line seven, inserting the words, against a business having 10 employees or more. would limit the application of this statute to those businesses having 10 employees or more. It would not reduce or diminish the ability of people to bring nuisance actions against employers with 10 employees or less. The next amendment would be to page 1, line 9, or the next section, I should say, and that is to add, and it is not in violation of the term or condition of a statute or regulation, license, permit, order, etc. Reason for doing that is to state, probably restating the obvious, but to very, very clearly enunciate the fact that the person holding the permit is not currently in violation of that permit or doing anything that would violate that permit. The last portion or section of the amendment to page 1, line 11, after the word issued, insert the words after public hearing. So the sentence would read, a license, permit, or order issued after public hearing by the state or federal government, so as to clearly differentiate between those permits, licenses, or orders that would be achieved without the benefit of a public hearing. That is to further clarify arguments made by the minority leader yesterday and concerns that he raised about whether or not every permit or application for a permit would result in this form of civil immunity from nuisance suit. It obviously further limits the application of the legislation. In addition to that, I might also add that the Administrative Procedures Act of the State of Alaska furthermore provides additional remedies and procedures whereby a person may appeal and get at least agency sanctions for the misuse or inappropriate permitting of an activity other than through nuisance actions.
Senator Duncan?
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple of comments, maybe a question and a comment at the same time. First of all, and I'm not an attorney, so I don't know the answer to this, but it seems to me that there may be we're discriminating here based on the size of the firm and on the number of employers, and I'm wondering if that doesn't cause some type of constitutional problem of equal protection or whatever the proper phrase may be when you say, okay, if you've got more than 10 employers, you cannot be sued. If you've got less than 10 employers, you can be. And I'm wondering if the judiciary chairs look at that. Secondly, I don't understand why we would want to take the position in this legislature of saying it's okay to sue the small business person, it's okay to sue the firm of 10 employees or less, but the big guys get off scot-free. I mean, what this means is, as I understand it, that if you're a employer or a firm of 10 employees or less, and you are perceived to cause a nuisance, you can be sued. But if you're a big boy and you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, you can't be sued. That just isn't fair. And is this, why are we beating up on a small employer? Are we willing to put those folks out of business? The majority of the leader was concerned that people being sued were going to be put out of business. If that's the case, you're saying it's okay to put the small people out of business, but those big international firms shouldn't be sued? This is not good public policy. Even worse, makes it worse than what the original bill was.
Senator Rieger?
Yeah, Mr. President, we have a brief at ease, please.
Senate, please stand at ease.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Taylor.
Yes, I would move at this time to divide the question.
Senator Taylor, would you explain the division you're moving?
If the members will please look to the amendment. They'll find that there are three separate sections to the amendment. I would move to divide and ask that we vote first on Section A, which would be the first segment or paragraph of the amendment, and it's worded as follows. Page 1, line 7, insert following the word section, quote, against a business having 10, parent 10 employees or more, unquote. That would be segment A of amendment number 2. Segment B would be the two paragraphs following. I ask unanimous consent.
Senator Adams.
Mr. President, I was hoping that the maker of this amendment would further divide it into three sections, that the P1 through L9 would be a separate section as it matches my amendment number 3, the P1, it's hard to see L19 here, is I was hoping there would be 3 amendments that would be divided, and so we can vote on these separately.
The question is divisible either into 2 or into 3 parts fairly simply. Senator Taylor?
Yeah, it's a very simple thing to make that change to accommodate this my colleague from Kotzebue, no problem.
Senator Taylor, would you withdraw your initial motion and replace the motion for a division into 3, stating Part A, Part B, and Part C?
Right. I move to withdraw my original motion, dividing it into 2 portions.
Without objection, the original motion for division is withdrawn. Senator Taylor?
I now move and ask unanimous consent to divide the motion into 3 parts. Parts A, which is page 1, line 7, Part B, page 1, line 9, Part C, page 1, line 11.
Okay, the motion is for a 3-part division. Is there objection, as explained? Without objection, the question will be divided into Part A, Part B, and Part C. That brings before us the question of Amendment number 2, Part A. Senator Taylor.
Yes, I join my colleague, the good minority leader, and ask members to vote no.
Okay. Is it the good minority leader? Which one is this? The question before the Senate is the adoption of Amendment number 2, Part A. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so amendment number 2, Part A, is defeated by 20 nays, 0 yeas. Senator Taylor.
Thank you. I move Part B and ask for an affirmative vote.
The question before the Senate is the adoption of amendment number 2, Part B. Members may proceed. Senator Adams.
Object. Just for clarification, the only problem I have, this is similar language to the amendment I'm going to offer. The only problem I have with this, if maybe we have an ID, somebody doesn't have the amendment over here.
Senator, please stand these.
Adams. If I may continue, it's the same as mine, but I just have a question. Does this cover the Exxon issue with the present language that you presently have here? So could this language that we presently have cut off the a substantial portions of the oil spill litigation, and that's where the question arises? And I didn't see that, but I just thought if somebody knew that answer, I didn't think so, but I'd like to hear it from the sponsor.
Senator Taylor.
I wanted to, clearly on the record, that it certainly is not the intention that it do that, and I know of no way in which it could.
I remove my objection. The question before the Senate is the adoption of Amendment Number 2, Part B. Is there further objection to Part B of Amendment Number 2? Without objection, Part B is adopted. That brings us to Amendment Number 2, Part C. Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent, Amendment Number 2, Part C.
There is objection to Part C, Amendment Number 2. Senator Adams.
I don't know if this effectively solves the problem. I asked the question, but what about a new property owner long after an action was permitted and the public hearing was years before? I don't think there will be still no recourse with this bill to sue. And I'd like to use an example in Anchorage. Happens to be with the, what is oxygen-generated fuel problem. There was no public hearing on that. It was allowed by regulation without public hearing. And if somebody was affected by that fuel and lived on the Anchorage Highway, with this amendment, there would be no civil nuisance recourse. Is that correct? Under that example,
there would be no recourse to enjoin as a nuisance. There would certainly be recourse still available for the normal civil damage suit for the injuries to the individual.
That does not change any of those aspects, only the ability to sue in nuisance for injunction.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of Amendment Number 2, Part C. Is there further objection? Without objection, Amendment Number 2, Part C is adopted. We have now adopted Part B and Part C of Amendment Number 2. The first part of Amendment Number 2, Part A, was not adopted, which brings the bill back before us in third reading on reconsideration and final passage. Senator Adams.
Yes, I do have three amendments that has passed around. The first one that has Amendment Number 4 will be withdrawn. That was accepted by the Majority Leader's Part B. The next one, I'd like to move NASS unanimous consent to go back from third to second for a purpose of a specific amendment, that being Amendment Number 4.
There is objection to return to second reading for a specific Amendment Number 4. Senator Adams.
This amendment specifically exempt claims for the placement of nuclear waste. As I discussed the other day, the Project Chariot, which incident is only public document because somebody stumbled onto the documents that authorize this activity. This is near the village of Point Hope in my district, and what I want to do was to exclude that so they can go on their recourse with their litigation, and that's the only problem I have with this piece of legislation.
Further debate on the motion to return to second reading for specific Amendment Number 4. Senator Taylor.
I really have no objection. I think it's already covered. I can't believe that any such activities were ever permitted or that they would fall within this zone or, in fact, that a nuisance action would be of any benefit to the people of Point Hope.
Senator Taylor, do you withdraw your objection to moving back to second reading?
I'm going to withdraw my objection. I don't think it does any damage to the legislature.
Without objection, committee substitute for Senate Bill 178, Judiciary Amended, is returned to second reading for purposes of consideration of specific Amendment Number 4. Senator Adams.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Amendment Number 4.
Amendment Number 4 has been moved and explained. Is there objection? Without objection, Amendment Number 4 is adopted. That brings the bill again before us in third reading on final passage. Senator Adams.
The last amendment I have, Mr. President, is number 5. I move that we go from third to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment, that being Amendment Number 5.
We have a motion to return to second reading for specific Amendment Number 5. Senator Adams.
Thank you. It's a simple amendment. It's just basically a title change. The way the civil nuisance action was, it's just too broad, and basically I brought this down to what's within this bill.
I'm going to maintain the objection. We feel the title is sufficiently narrow even at this point. Civil nuisance actions is a very narrow portion of the law.
Question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 178, Judiciary Amended, be returned to second reading for purposes of specific amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Will the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute for Senate Bill 178, Judiciary Amended, has not returned to second reading for the consideration of specific amendment number 5. Pardon? Senator Rieger.
Mr. President, I move that we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment number 6, which is being duplicated, but if you allow me, I can read it so that we could talk about it while it's being copied.
Senator Rieger, while it's being duplicated, go ahead and the first motion is the motion to return to second reading, and under explanation of the amendment, Senator Rieger.
Mr. President, what What I would want to offer in second reading when we get back is an additional lettered subparagraph, which would go right after the part which is lettered B, the lines 7 through 13. After that, there would be a clause inserted which states, the provisions of B do not apply to actions regarding a nuisance in an area zoned as residential by a city, borough, or municipality regarding view or noise. And if I can elaborate on that, one of the concerns that I have is the kinds of neighbor-to-neighbor type conflicts that can happen in a residential area. And I think that there's been some question as to whether really there would be that many nuisance actions ever even brought. There's other types of actions which can be brought, but this is a belt and suspenders, which would give me comfort that those kinds of things could still be addressed.
Senator Adams.
Just got the deal. Did the maker of the amendment look at also odor that could be a nuisance in some areas?
In response, no, I didn't.
Senator Little.
Thank you, Mr. President. In zoning ordinances, typically smell, dust, and vibration are talked about as far as nuisance actions go. This might go part of the way to addressing a problem, but it certainly doesn't address it thoroughly.
Question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 178, Judiciary Amended, be returned to second reading for specific amendment number 6. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? And does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute Senate Bill 178, Judiciary Amended, has been returned to second reading for specific amendment number 6 by a vote of 18 yeas to 2 nays. Senator Rieger, would you move your amendment?
Mr. President, I move the amendment number 6 and ask unanimous consent.
Amendment number 6 has been moved and unanimous consent has been asked. Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, you know, this, I think, does make some sense of some kind, but it seems to me there's a lot more consideration here than just view or noise. In fact, I'm not quite sure what we mean by view. Was that the East Anchorage Senator again?
Let him sleep.
He tries to hide his head now, but you can't mistake the voice. Or was it?
Senator Duncan.
Thank you. I'm not quite sure what we mean by view. Plus, I'm not quite sure what we mean by zone as residential. For example, I mean, I know what zone as residential means, but I'm trying to see why we're limiting it to that. And again, whether or not we may have a constitutional question here. There's all kinds of residential zoning, and then there's light commercial and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Some of these property owners can lose value in their property just as much as if they have commercial property or as if it's residential property. For example, let's say a hotel on the waterfront somewhere might have severe impact. And the neighboring property might be residential, so the residential fellow can sue and the guy owning the hotel can't. I guess I don't think this is well thought out. I think it should be more inclusive. One, just view or noise is inclusive enough. Plus, I really wonder about, again, you're giving a right to a residential property owner that you're not giving to a commercial property owner. And is that constitutional? If the answer is this makes the bill more unconstitutional, then we should adopt it. Judge? Former judge, Mr. Majority Leader, do you have...
With that, the question before Senator Little.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe that this amendment is an indication that this bill is really bad. My area
The Kenai Peninsula Borough has decided not to have area-wide zoning. Most people who live outside of cities, and there are many, many in the Kenai Peninsula, are not zoned. And it's been a very controversial thing in the Kenai Peninsula, yet there are many very expensive houses outside of the cities along the Kenai River, for instance, and they would gain no protection here. I just don't see the fairness, and I'm going to be voting against this because it makes no sense to me to protect one individual and not another individual homeowner. I think we should all have similar protections and should all be able to defend our property and our right to enjoy it.
The question before the Senate is the adoption of Amendment Number 6. Senator Kutula.
President, for the potential amendment, why don't we have smell in here? A gasification oxygenation plant was built right across from my house. Let me tell you, it's not a pleasant situation. And I moved, but nonetheless, it was sure a heavy nuisance. And it was built precisely within the terms of this, and I'm speaking personally, but it was built precisely within the terms of this amendment. It is in a zone next to, a residential area. I don't know if that area is zoned, but it's right across the street from residential area, and it's a misery. And I'm not sure that in another area, no noise is a big problem, but these smells are something. They move right in front of you, and you've had it. So I'm not sure. I don't know why we wouldn't add smell to it. I question of the author or whoever else is pushing this bill, is there any big problem with adding noise or smell or something of that sort, noise, or what would you say that's a more encompassing, better, illustrative word than smell? But that's precisely what I'm talking about. You know, SO2 and so on are not pleasant to have floating around all over the place.
I would suggest the word odor.
Odor, yes. Odor, of course. Odor, not smell. Odor. Yeah.
Senator Rieger?
Mr. President, the examples which came to my mind in drafting the amendment regarded viewer noise, and that was why I drafted the way I did. There was no specific intention to exclude or include anything other than that.
Mr. President. Senator Petula?
I'll try. We can take a second, or we can write in there, just delete the period after noise and put a comma, I presume. No, just say or noise or odor. Replace quotation mark for the period.
Okay, Senator Kutula, I would suggest that if you want to put odor in there, you simply add it after the word view, so it would read
okay.
View, odor, or noise.
Yes, I've looked
but,
at that again,
be,
thinking of
because
the
we went back to second reading for a purpose of specific amendment, I would only do that if we had unanimous consent, because we didn't. We are now, in fact, amending an amendment that we went back to second reading for in specific, and I don't want to establish a precedent, but that's the way to get back to second reading.
Right. Well, I'll withdraw the amendment. Just a thought.
Senator Kutula?
If there's no objection, then I will move that we put in regarding view odor, right after view on the next last line, view, comma, odor, or noise. Doesn't seem to me. Is there an objection?
Will the Senate please stand at ease? Please come back to order. Senator Kutula has moved and asked unanimous consent that we insert the word odor after the word view on the last line of the amendment. Is there objection? Without objection, the amendment is amended to add the word odor. The amendment is now before us in final passage. Senator Little.
Thank you, Mr. President. I really believe that there's an equal protection problem here with this amendment. so many people in this state live outside of municipalities without any sort of zoning regulations. And, you know, where's their satisfaction, I guess I'm asking. It's just not a equally, it's not fair. It provides protections for some individuals, depending on whether or not they happen to have zoning, and not for others. I think there's a serious equal protection problem with the amendment.
Senator Pierce.
Can we have a brief at ease?
Senator will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? The question before us is the adoption of Amendment Number 6 as amended. Is there further debate? If there's no further debate, would the members please vote on the adoption of Amendment Number 6 as amended? Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Will the Senator Donnelly? Senator Donnelly, if you would vote the other way. Senator Donnelly changes from a yea to a nay. The roll shows 11 yeas and 9 nays. So Amendment Number 6, as amended, has been adopted. That brings the bill back before us in third reading on final passage under reconsideration. Senator Adams.
Yes. I looked through this piece of legislation, but I don't see any fiscal note. Why is there not one from risk management on this legislation?
Senator Taylor.
It's my understanding because it actually reduces the amount of litigation that actually may be available and thus reduces the amount of liability that may be available also for risk management.
Senator Little.
Thank you, Mr. President. The way that I see this bill is it's greatly going to increase litigation that the state is involved in. It may serve to decrease litigation that private companies are involved in, but it certainly will increase the state's litigation files. It's going to take... we are going to be accepting liability, the state will be, if this legislation passes. Not only that, but we are going to be removing, even with the last amendment that passed, we are going to be removing a substantial number, well, we are going to be removing rights for a substantial number of people in this state to seek justice through the court system for problems around their own home properties. I just feel very strongly that this is the wrong thing for us to be doing in this state. It's going to cost the state money. And besides that, I still don't believe that the constitutional question has been answered. I urge a no vote.
Senator Duncan.
Just several comments on the legislation. It's been debated, and I think pretty fully. And I think, quite honestly, based upon the amendments that were offered today, there's a recognition by members of this body that there are serious problems with this legislation, and these amendments were trying to correct that and just really didn't reach it. In fact, I think they caused greater problems. I also believe that there's constitutional problems with this legislation. Constitutional problems because of the retroactive provision. And that's a provision that just should not be in this legislation or any bill, retroactive, and there's no real good reason for that to be there. And our legal attorney, our attorneys from legal services have indicated that this probably is unconstitutional and will undoubtedly be challenged if this legislation passes. I think the amendment that we adopted by the senator from Anchorage causes equal protection problems and undoubtedly is unconstitutional because certain property owners are being allowed to sue, others are not, depending upon whether you live in an area that's zoned or not zoned, and also whether you have residential or commercial property. I can't see any way that that can be treating property owners equally and fairly. I think that's an unconstitutional provision. So, Mr. President, I think we're passing legislation that's unconstitutional. We're passing legislation that really does shift the burden from the company to the government. If nuisances or if problems are caused, you know, we're really preventing the private citizen, taking away private citizens' rights from filing a claim against a company for some type of continuing problem, whether it be whatever it may be, which affects their ability to live on their property or lowers their property values, and I think property values can be lowered. But let me also just mention specifically, because I want to be sure it's clear for the record, the majority leader and I got into a little exchange the other day about what impact this is going to have on present projects that are being going through the permitting process, and one of them is a local project here, and I think it was inappropriate to bring that discussion in here because it really does not apply. This bill deals with what happens after a permit is in place. It does not deal at all with the permitting process of what's going on now. And to infer or to make statements the other day that there was abuse of the present permitting process for the AJ mine is completely uncalled for. I think that process has worked. The Planning Commission has spent hours working with both the company and the community in order to resolve differences and conflicts and allow that project to move forward. There's been no abuse of that project. And to imply and to say, so this community is aware of that, that this is going to cost hundreds of jobs, it's going to stop a project, is completely erroneous. The majority leader was throwing out a red herring here, it's a completely erroneous statement. The AJ mine will go through the permitting process. It's going through the permitting process. We expect that permit to be issued by the Planning Commission very shortly, and that process will continue. They will probably get their permit. It will be appealed to the Assembly, and the process will continue. All this bill says is after the permit is in place and the company is operating, if something happens that causes a problem for a property owner, they can't sue anymore. You'll have to sue the government. Under present law, they would be able to sue to regain the value of their property, to protect the value of their property. It's not going to put hundreds of people out of work. There's no way that that type of a suit is going to close down an operation like the AJ mine after it's gone through the permitting process and the investment that they've had to get there. It was erroneous. It was a misstatement. It did not do service to this community or to the Echo Bay folks who are going through the permitting process. Or to the Planning Commission of this community to say that this was going to have impact on that process. It will not, nor will it close down the AJ mine. All that would happen with this bill is that private property owners no longer have the protection they should have. But I'm confident that permitting process is working well. It will continue to work well. I also believe that once the mine is in operation in this community, private property owners should have the right, if they are being damaged, if their property values are being lowered because of some type of action after the permitting process, they should have a right to recover those damages. We pass this legislation, they won't have the right. But the bottom line is, it will not put people out of work or close down that mine. And I want that clear for the record, Mr. President.
Question before the Senate is final passage of committee substitute Senate Bill 178, judiciary amended. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute Senate Bill 178, judiciary amended, is passed the Senate by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays. Senator Taylor.
I move the effective date clause.
Senator Taylor has moved the effective date clause. The question before the Senate is, shall the effective date clause, a committee substitute for Senate Bill 178, judiciary amended, be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? The roll shows 11 yeas and 9 nays, so the legislation will take effect 90 days after signing by the governor. Will the secretary please read the next item on the calendar? Senator Adams?
I serve notice of my vote on Senate Bill 178.
Senator Adams, it's on reconsideration. A
It was a reconsideration that was brought up and carried forward.
We'll do it one more time.
Good try, Senator. Would the Secretary please read the next item on the calendar?
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 4 by Senator Taylor relating to the Alaska Supreme Court interpretation of the Alaska Rule of Civil Procedure 82 and requesting that the court modify its interpretation of that rule before the Senate on reconsideration.
The question before the Senate is final passage on reconsideration of SCR 4. Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, I just wanted to make it clear again that this is a letter to the Supreme Court from 11 members of this legislature. Okay, there will also undoubtedly be communication to the Supreme Court from other members of this legislature. This is not, does not carry any weight that I can see at all. But I want to be sure that was clear and on the record that the Supreme Court, of course, will understand that there's other folks who have very strong feelings otherwise.
Senator Kelly?
I disagree with that statement. This isn't simply a letter of 11 members. This is a resolution passed by a majority of the members of this body. And if it's joined by a majority of members of the other body, it's a resolution passed by the legislature of the state of Alaska. It's not just a letter.
Senator Duncan?
And he knows something I don't know. The last time I checked, you had 11 members in the majority.
Senator Curtula.
The former judge wants to amend Rule 82 is interesting, but it's a concurrent resolution. So it probably goes halfway between something of a serious directive nature, which it is not at all, and just a letter. I always called him a letter when we sent him. That's just exactly the way I stated it.
I would only note that it will pass by the same majority as the budget, probably. The question before the Senate is final passage on SCR 4. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Senator Curtula. Any other member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 4 has passed the Senate by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays on reconsideration.
Citation. Honoring Police Memorial Day Centers, Jacko Phillips, Lehman Little, Pertula, Pierce, Donnelly, Ellis, Taylor, Lincoln, Rigger, Jaroff, Duncan, Halford, and Kelly. Honoring Mike Williams, Center, Jaroff, Duncan, Lincoln, Pertula, Jacko, Little, Adams, Pierce, Donnelly, Ellis, Rigger, Halford. Honoring Tribal Unity, Senators Jacko, Lincoln, Little, Adams, Pertula.